Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Anide Akuru, who is the Executive Director of Africa Faith and Justice Network, a community of advocates for responsible U.S. relations with Africa. Welcome to Background Briefing, Anide Akuru.
Thank you.
Tell me, what is your understanding of the general strikes that are going on that have essentially brought Nigeria to a standstill over the doubling of the price of gasoline because of the removal of gas subsidies? Why did President Goodluck Jonathan do this, do you think?
Okay. As I said, my name is Anide Akuru from Africa Faith and Justice Network in Washington.
Oh, I see. It's not. We have a different guest on. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead. Could you answer the question?
Yes. The situation is very unfortunate. The point is that the president tells the public that he's removing the subsidy from oil, from gas, to use for infrastructure. The point is that the estimated amount is $7 billion. That is a very paltry sum, considering the total revenue for Nigeria. That amount could easily be gotten from the political elites who are paying themselves enormous amount of money, who are wasting the country's resources on useless projects rather than make life hard for the people. Imagine this, that people were paying an equivalent of $1.70 for a gallon of gas. And then overnight, they are paying about $3.75. That is totally untenable. The government can easily take the other sources to find out how to invest in the infrastructure in the country. And by the way, for the last 10, 20 years, Nigeria has been receiving large sums of revenue from the oil. It has not invested in the infrastructure for the country.
So it is an oil-rich country, but it doesn't refine its own gasoline and has to import gasoline, which was subsidized by the government. Now they've removed these subsidies, and the people are upset. There have been riots, and there's a general strike. What's the annual income of the average Nigerian? Just to get a perspective on how this is hurting them.
Okay, let me say this. Okay, let me do a class of people. You see, an annual income. Okay, say somebody would be living. Say even a school principal will be getting an equivalent of about $100 a month, okay? You get the perspective.
Sure.
So you're looking at about $3,600 a year. That is for the average worker. The average lawmaker takes home more money than President Obama earns in a year. You see the discrepancies. So if the government wanted to get resources to invest in the country, it would first have to see, explore other avenues where they are wasting money. For example, now, after the riot started, the president came up, President Jonathan Goodluck came up and said, okay, that he will slash the salaries of lawmakers by 25%. That is what he should have done first. That is what he should have explored first, and as I say, there are other avenues to come up with that $7 billion without making life harder for the people. And you indicated that the oil is refined abroad and then exported back in Nigeria. For the last 30 years, Nigeria could have built its oil refineries. And the few oil refineries that are there are not working. So it could have refined its own oil and prevent this from happening.
So in this situation, though, was Good Luck Jonathan, the president, was he pressured by the IMF to make these savings? Because, I mean, apart from the fact that it's cruel and ridiculous to take money out of poor people, and as if you want to save money, go after the rich. That's the same argument that applies here in the United States. If you need revenues,
and
is the IMF pushing this, or what's
this time around? The notion is that it is the World Bank that is pressurizing the government to do this, and I don't think there was enough consultation, because the Congress, the Nigerian Congress, has voted yesterday to asking the president to rescind the decision. You know, there were negotiations going on that with the labor union that this will not take effect until April, and so overnight, in the cover of the night, on Sunday, the first of the year, somebody sneaked in and just made the announcement. So you see, there's a lot of deception going on here. And the last time there was this kind of advice from IMF about structural adjustment program, immediately they implemented that, the economy just went bust, and the country has not recovered from it. So this kind of advice is only giving more avenues for the political elite to embezzle more money. The country, the international community, if they want to advise the government, should pressurize them to tackle corruption within the country first. That's the first and foremost thing. That is what is draining the economy of Nigeria, the resources, people, politicians taking the money, buying million-dollar homes abroad, investing in other things that does not benefit the people, banking them in with fictitious names abroad. And they know who they are. They know where they are banking this money. Nigeria could easily recover $10-20 billion from these people without having to make life difficult for the poor masses.
Again, I'm speaking with Anita Akure, who is Executive Director of Africa Faith, the Africa Faith and Justice Network, a community of advocates for responsible U.S. relations with Africa. And there is also another element, surely, in what's happening in Nigeria, and that is that this corrupt government that you're describing has declared a state of emergency in its conflict with the Islamic militia Boko Haram. Where does that stand?
Well, you know, this Boko Haram group has been growing up since the year 2003. Unfortunately, the government didn't tackle it head on. And it has grown to be a formidable force now, causing a serious destabilization in the country, as you have followed the news, you know, bombing Christian churches, attacking police barracks, and they claim responsibility for bombing the UN building in Abuja. And even though the government has imposed, close some boundaries and send troops into the states where most affected, that is not enough. It's a little too late. Something should have been done much earlier. And also, I have to acknowledge that this group is like, quote, an Al-Qaeda group, in the sense that it is not, you can't really pinpoint it in one place. It is a very fluid group, and unfortunately, some of the elites, the political elites, who want to destabilize the present government are part and parcel of this. So if the government really wants to tackle it, it needs to go aggressively by having the state's security agents to investigate and trace and find out who are involved in this process. I think what is happening here is more than just a religious sect. Some people are disenfranchised with the situation in the country, and so it becomes a breeding avenue for recruiting young people who have no jobs, who are uneducated, who are promised false hope for the future. So they become participants in destabilizing the government. And that is what is striking me, what makes the response more, I'm flabbergasted that in the midst of that, people feeling insecure, people feeling threatened by this, the government went ahead and declared the removal of subsidies, further aggravating the situation. So he should have tackled that first and tackled the rich first before implementing whatever he thinks about the removal of the subsidy.
So, Anita Akuri, does this mean, though, that the divide between the Muslim North and the Christian South is not a real one, and are the Nigerian people united in their disgust at their government, or are they divided along sectarian lines?
Well, you know, they're united against the government in many ways. In fact, for example, the strike today took place in Kano, in the extreme northern part of the country, in Abuja, in Lagos, and across the country. In terms of uniting against the government, this cuts across ethnic lines. It cuts across religious lines. The Boko Haram issue is, for me, a very different thing. It is part and parcel of a global network in some ways of the rise of Islamic sectarianism. But then, it's not all Muslims who are part of this. There are some Muslims who are actually against it. In fact, last year, it started between Muslims, which they saw as progressive Muslims, versus this sectarian group. And then it spilled on into the Christians becoming the target, because the name Boko Haram, Boko Haram means literally Western education is sinful, is a sin, you know. So they don't want to have any linkages with the West. And right now they see Christianity in many ways as a product of Western society. So they're attacking Christians, they're attacking institutions that they still represent this Western education. And the irony in it is that in doing so, they're using the mechanisms of the West that they're fighting against, you know. They're driving in cars to go and bomb. They're getting bombs that is, you know, made in the West and all of that. So there is a big irony in this. And although, of course, there have been suggestions even from the state security services that this group now has links to Al-Qaeda. In fact, the leader is quoted to have said, well, we are fighting for the same thing that Al-Qaeda is fighting. We and Al-Qaeda are one. So I wouldn't be surprised that this group has links to Al-Qaeda, because the level of sophistication which they use to attack is not something that just a group of disgruntled young people can do, given the level of their illiteracy. They are not all that educated in many ways. So some other hand is still guiding what is happening here.
Well, I thank you for joining us here today, Anita Akuri, and for filling us in on what's happening in Nigeria, and we should stay in touch.
Thank you. You have a good night.
You too. Again, I've been speaking with Anita Akuri, who is Executive Director of the Africa Faith and Justice Network, a community of advocates for responsible U.S. relations with Africa. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about The Devil and Rick Santorum, Dilemmas of a Holy, that's H-O-L-Y, owned subsidiary.
Nothing but a dirty, dirty old man. You do your thinking with a one-track mind. Keep talking about heaven, glory, but on your face is a different story. Clean up your rap, your story's getting dusty. Wash out your mouth, your lies are getting rusty. Can't believe nothing you say, 'cause I'm around and I see what you do.